Hello, Solari. Welcome to the Health Series. I'm Jennifer Walters, and I am really excited about this today, this interview that I have set up. I have a roundtable of doctors that are amazing. They're from the New Biology Clinic. It's a place I've actually joined because I wanted to see, what are they doing over there? That seems pretty interesting. And it's actually right up my alley. So just a quick background on why I decided to choose the New Biology Clinic for my doctors to come in and help me with going over laboratory testing, whether we should do it, what is it important, what labs are good, you know, all the questions that you guys send me. After my firstborn son was vaccine injured, I went and I did all my digging and was working on rescuing him and getting him better and getting his health back. And at the same time, I wanted another baby. So I started researching and I started studying, what actually are these diseases that I won't be giving vaccines for, right? Because you think to yourself, oh no, now I'm just stuck out on my own. And will my kid have protection? What will happen? What do I have to look for? You know, what should I do? So I started doing some deep digging. I started with a book called The Curse of Louis Pasteur. And I'll put all these links in. They're pretty interesting books. I went on to, of course, one of our favorites. It had just come out, I think, Dissolving Illusions. It came out when I first started looking into this for my second baby. Let's see, what else did I look at? I looked at, oh, that's right. This book, Just a Little Prick, it was one that I was studying a long time ago for vaccine injury, but I was able to find all the like research papers because I wanted to see, how did they find these viruses? How did they find these diseases? Did that bacteria actually hurt somebody? And just long story short, from what I found, and this was in 2011, I thought, you know, I said to my husband, I don't think we need any of these vaccines. I don't think any of these diseases are actually diseases. In fact, I don't even think some of them exist. Most of it looks like animal torture to me. Like they take an animal and they grind up brains and like stick it in the other animal's brain, or they take a bunch of gross stuff and snot and bleh, and then they pour it down poor little ferret's nose, like a whole cup worth of stuff. And then they're like, look, he's coughing. Or they'll say, hey, all these mice died. It's like, yeah, it says in the paper that they killed them, right? Like it wasn't the virus or the bacteria or the disease that killed them. They actually went in and just like cut them up because they had to see what happened. So anyway, long story short, I've been thinking that for years. And so I'm just focused on health. And that's the reason I was very excited when Catherine asked me to do the health series. So that's the reason also that, remember, one of my first health series, we talked about aluminum and we had Dr. Axley on. And then we talked about chelating, mercury and lead and different things, if you have heavy metals, and basically nutrition. And we also spoke to Nurse Nicole during the pandemic. And so we could find out that, look, they're actually killing people in the hospital. And it's not that people are dying at home from a new illness. Now, I don't think that COVID-19 was its own illness, a new illness, because I deal with sick people all the time. Now, a lot of you know, a lot of the people that I know and I love and I totally support, they don't think this. They think that what they were sick with was something new, that they were poisoned, et cetera, whatever. I just want to tell you that everybody's always sick. Everybody that I deal with has had loss of taste, fevers, headaches, trouble breathing, pneumonia. I have patients that have pneumonia because they don't get out of their chairs. They don't stand up and walk. So now they have pneumonia. Okay. So that happens. And so I just try to keep everybody healthy. Okay. Enough about that. Just letting you know where I stand. And I think that we really don't know anything about how things really work, but we're starting to listen to our bodies and we're starting to find doctors that actually listen to us, tell us about what our bodies are doing. And then I think that that's going to start to pull us out of this trap where we'll end up in airports having to get swabbed just to be able to like cross a border. So we don't want to have that happen. So I think that we need to focus on the positives and I'll stay healthy. Okay, so let me welcome in the doctors of the new biology clinic. If you guys could take turns and introduce yourselves, that would be really helpful for me. Do you want to start with the founder of the new biology clinic, Dr. Tom Cowan, that we all know and love?
Okay. So I've been a guest on Solari before, and I'm the Tom Cowan, and I'm the guy who says there's no such thing as a virus. And I've written 7 books, one of which was proving that there's no such thing as a virus. And I've decided that there's a lot of other things that don't exist either, including these childhood diseases are not actually specific entities. And the reason the New Biology Clinic got started was essentially my son, who runs our business, said like, "Dad, you've been talking about this stuff for 20 years.
Well, I'm glad you did. I actually have those books. These are all going to be on the links. I really love them. This Breaking the Spell, I love it. It's small and it's easy to read, you know, quick, and it just shows it all. So everybody's getting this as a stocking stuffer.
Yeah, so we found some wonderful doctors who I would say together we're trying to forge a how do you really do medicine? That's what I would say.
Okay, who wants to go next?
I can. So yeah, I'm Adam Ouellette. So I joined New Biology kind of at its beginning. It's been a year and a half now. And I think we all have similar paths to what Jennifer described, right? Coming from going through learning the whole medical system and seeing, wait a minute, what we're being told isn't really the truth. And so once we start looking deeper into things, we start to see that really the focus really distracts us from what truly heals us. And so I really like this topic of focusing on what is, you know, what are these diagnoses in labs and what are they really telling us? Because certainly the whole modern medical construct, and which goes into where a lot of the alternative health, right, functional medicine, alternative natural health, they use these same constructs that are false. They're focusing on a diagnosis, and that's what the whole system's built around. You have to do these labs so you can get this diagnosis, and then that's where, you know, the treatment, the medication, or the surgery comes in. And so the entire billing and everything goes around this whole construct of you need a diagnosis, and they're just fabricated names that have no attachment to what's really going on with our body and how to heal our body. So I think this is a foundational topic. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and they also go through all those ICD-9 codes, and ICD-10s, 11s now. And isn't it hooked up to like the World Health Organization now? And they're all, yeah, it's all going to go on our ledger. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's all coding. Yeah, it's all coding, and it's all a control mechanism.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next.
I'm Rodney Soto. I joined the clinic almost a year ago, and it's been an exciting journey to be able to participate in a group like this, led by Dr. Cowans. I have followed his work for so many years. Myself, I'm a trained neurologist, and I agree with Adam on what he says about the model itself. Certainly, we talk about neurological conditions in particular. They're very distracting when you're giving a diagnosis or a name, and therefore unfolds a different path that it doesn't take people to healing. So that's what we're here, and that's what we do. We try to guide people to find the path into regaining their health. Thank you for having us.
Sure. Last but not least.
Hi, Pam. Pam Shervanik. So I'm trained as a psychiatrist, but I had my own experience. I was an integrative doctor at the time with medicine, being diagnosed with some scary things. And intuitively, I just walked out of Mass General and found my own way. And that just proved to me how harmful things have been. I've followed Tom for a long time before the pandemic. And I was so excited to see that a group of people like us were coming together because there's so much more power in numbers. So I was very excited to join this, and it's been so amazing. And, you know, I can't wait to keep participating and watching it grow.
Going to be neat. Okay, so let's get into this. So Weston Price just had a great article called Medical Tests, Whose Interests Do They Really Serve? I think it's a great article. I'll link it below. So I'm just going to read a little bit of something from it. Medical tests clearly play a major role in the cultural landscape of Western medicine, which offers all kinds of tests for all kinds of reasons, including for screening, diagnosis, evaluation of disease severity, treatment monitoring, and risk protection. Like kids in a candy store, doctors have a staggering array of medical tests at their disposal. There are tests that sample bodily fluids, such as blood, urine, saliva, cerebrospinal fluid, tests that measure bodily functions, such as lung function, heart or brain, electrical activity, imaging tests like biopsies that remove and examine tissues, endoscopies that insert a tube through various orifices, or a custom incision to observe an internal organ. Yep. And I would prep people for a lot of those things way back when. And I can tell you the fear, you can feel it by the time they hit the floor and they're coming to prep for that test. They are so afraid that I would just sit there, hold their hand, and I would say, do you want me to pray with you? How could, you know, I would just try to get them to calm down, because I thought that's not going to do any good if they're, you know, scared to death. But anyway, so just really one more quick paragraph. It says, a 2014 telephone survey of 600 primary care and specialist physicians found that nearly 3 out of 4 doctors characterized the frequency of unnecessary tests and procedures as either somewhat or a very serious problem. Okay. Now, I'm not bagging on all tests, because I'm sure that there are probably a few that might be important to know. I'm thinking maybe blood glucose. Is that something that's important to know if somebody's diagnosed with diabetes? Or are we using it to heal them? Something like that. Or, and then I know some tests are just useless because the ranges change all the time, like cholesterol. So where do you want to start? Who wants to start? And let's start with maybe, are there any tests that you find useful at all? And then we can go into, or maybe not, it'll just kind of go into a conversation, but let's start at that. Like, what do you guys still use, or what do you feel is important?
I could start, because I don't want to be accused of being a hypocrite. And so I have very publicly said over and over again that the last time I had any medical test, blood test, EKG, anything, was 1984. And I know that year because that's when I started residency. And in order to become a resident, I had to do a series of blood tests.
Right.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it then either. And so if I was to say, well, I think blood tests are important and everybody should get screened, people might say, wait a minute, how come you don't do it? You know, I want other people to weigh in on this, but we're basically a story-based group. We hear the experience of the person. And the thing about blood tests, I used to ask myself when I still did some blood tests, let's say you have somebody with inflammation, right? Their joints are swollen, and you do a SED rate, and SED rate's 50. And then you tell them to do X, Y, or Z. You tell them to eat better, put a castor oil pack. And they come back and they say their joints are a lot better. Thank you very much. I'm good. And you do a SED rate and it's 60. It used to be 50. Do you say to the person, you know, that didn't work?
You're not,
you know,
good.
Your SED rate sucks and now you're really worse.
Right.
Or do you say, I shouldn't have done that test in the first place. just keep doing what you're doing because you're clearly better. And for me, it was the second, in which case I had to ask myself, since I didn't believe the blood test anyways, why did I do it? Right. And the other thing is I have 100% cure rate for elevated cholesterol, which is never do the test again. It's worked every single time.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's an irrelevant test, meaningless. But let me, I'll let other people weigh.
Well, cholesterol is actually a great one. It's really rare, but in the past, in mental health, in kids who have behavior problems, who are eating well, if you run a cholesterol and it's really, really low, that has been helpful in improving people's diets, but it's rare. But I've had like 3 or 4 cases where, you know, it's been like 60, again, if it's accurate, but they did respond well to high cholesterol diets, you know,
because yeah, we need my son did. Yeah. Great. We ran everything back then, but
my beef
doctors
with it
were
is,
amazed of how low it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Anyway. I feel like trusting a lab company at this point is like trusting, you know, healthcare, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. So let's talk about that. When you're
Can I interject something there? Because Pam, yeah. It's an interesting thing. So correct me if I'm wrong, but if the person you were testing had a normal cholesterol, you would still tell them to eat a high fat diet.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, in my private practice, you know, what had happened was, you know, people come in on the fence, right? So they want to see, they don't believe it unless there's like a test. And, you know, at this point, I'm not interested in appeasing people's curiosities, but I mean, I have to admit that like, there's like 2 cases specifically that I'm like, wow, you know, that was helpful because the kid wasn't going to, you know, eat this kind of thing unless, you know, they understood it.
Yeah. If we think about this, they developed because in modern medicine, we want more information, basically, or at least they wanted to figure out what's wrong with the patient. They want to monitor something. Are they deficient in something or they have too much of something? But in many ways, all that information actually is adding on to what we always doctors have done well for years, hundreds of years, which is taking a history. And going back to the point that Tom makes, yeah, that is the really primary discovery that we need to entertain and is to get into the bottom line of the problem. And that answer is going to be given by the history of the patient, regardless of what the test showed.
Agreed. Right. Anybody else?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because we could look at, you know, what are the problems, and there's quite a few different problems that you can encounter when you start doing testing. But I like looking at the bigger picture first. And I'm like Tom, and I think the others here is I don't do any routine testing on myself or my family. And for chronic routine issues, I wouldn't recommend that for others as well, right? That's, you know, an acute setting, which I don't practice acute medicine, like in a hospital setting, there could be benefit when someone's obviously, you know, I used to be anesthesiologist, so someone's unconscious in surgery and there's really acute changes happening and fluid shifts. So, you know, that's a different situation, but I think that's, you know, 95% of the time we're talking about chronic health issues, right? Today, there's not a whole lot of value in doing those tests because again, if we go back to the core thing is that's going to lead us to a diagnosis, right? That's the whole goal. If you break down the word diagnosis, di means to, agnosis or agnosia means the definitions. It means unable to process sensory information. So you have two people that are not all of a sudden that are disconnecting from your sensory input. We have senses for a reason to communicate and tell us, interact with our environment and tell us, communicate with how our body is doing. And so I think it's really, again, disconnecting us when we're trying to use these lab tests because our body is such an amazing instrument. It's telling us moment to moment, it doesn't lie, how you're doing. I mean, if you're severely depleted in something, your body can't function properly. And so it can't hide itself. It can't hide your deficiency state. If you're extremely toxic, your body can't hide that. Your body actually is trying to tell you when it's in pain, when there's an injury. So our body is trying its best to communicate. And if we're all we can do is I need to go in and get this lab test because that's all our focus, because we need to get a diagnosis. That's distracts us from really the most important part is our body's ability to communicate with us. And so we need to be more in touch with our senses and listening to our body. And if we don't understand what's going on, then we, you know, it's great. There's lots of help, you know, we can try to help. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. That makes me think of, I've had maybe a dozen people that have called me because, again, I volunteer and I still work with vaccine injured families. I'll just go in and kind of clean out their cupboards and, you know, I just go in and help, right? Because what are you going to do? My son is now 17 and doing great. I mean, I wouldn't say he's what he was when he was first born, but he's great. He talks and he walks and he thinks and he laughs and he's happy. So, and he's getting ready to drive a car. We're fixing up a 2004 Silverado for him. So that's very exciting. So anyway, I think he's doing good. Okay. But when I have these patients and I go in to see them, a lot of them are coming back from the hospital with procedures. They've had sensors implanted in them to test continually for blood sugar. And most of these people, it's a type 2 issue, I would say, or whatever you call it now. I mean, I start to think that everything is fake. I'm living on a flat earth and we never went to the moon. You know what I mean? Like, that's how my brain is now. I'm like, I don't know what is true, right? Okay, I'm not really a flat earther, but anyway, it's just a joke. Okay, so when I look at these testing and wearables, these biosensors, they come home and they say, and some of these people are 300-400 pounds. And they say, the doctor told me that my obesity is a disease and I can't help it. And there's nothing I can do about it. So they're going to help me just live my life safely with the right things. So they get an insulin pump that's bioelectric thing inside them. Some of them just get the biosensor that tells their blood sugar. So then they give themselves the dose of whatever. And it's just, it's so overwhelming. There's so many people that are getting it now. And I'm sure it has codes now and there's lots of money being made off of it, but they're actually implanting these Wi-Fi devices. They can put their phone near their body and it tells them their blood sugar right away. So what do you guys think about that?
So we have to understand, because we're all four trained medical doctors. We've heard the rap. The essence of modern conventional medicine, and I would say a large part of so-called alternative and functional medicine, is the fundamental premise that you have nothing to do with your illness. Nothing. The reasons you get sick are bad luck, germs, or genetics. Right? That's it. And woe unto you, doctor, if you ever tell the patient, you know, maybe you shouldn't have done that, or like did, you know, lived like that or ate all that or whatever. That's like verboten, because then you're blaming the patient and you're a jerk and you should never do that. And the purpose of that is to disempower people. That's the purpose. And put the power into the medical system where they want it so that they can do things to you because it's you didn't do anything. And so this is an example of that. Whereas if you just think like a little bit rationally about somebody coming in like 400 pounds, you might think, you know, I should probably ask this guy like what he eats and what he does during the day. And maybe he's like a little too fat. And right? Like, maybe if I work with that a little bit, his life might get better. Now, you can think about that. Which do you think will help you more? working with somebody who thinks like that and will help you, you know, not be so fat and so dysfunctional, or someone who says, no, you're good. Just this thing.
Yeah, everything's fine. It's not your fault.
You're good. You didn't do it. It's genetics.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom, you took the words out of my mouth, because that's exactly what I was going to say. It's a tool of this empowerment from the power that the actual individual should have into restoring their own health.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the way our world is going. I mean, it matches with just this whole liberal, you know, output of like, oh my gosh, you know, people, they can't help this. They can't help, they're gender confused. Like it has no responsibility in it, you know? And it's become taboo, to say it lightly, to even say like, did you ever think maybe the microplastics could have something to do with the fact that like, we can't figure out what gender we are anymore. And like, you can't, you know, so there's so many realms of normal culture that show you like, it's not okay to take responsibility. You're just a victim. And we all need to support that, you know, and that will cause disease in anyone.
And speaking of the biosensors as well, there is a fasting. I love fasting. I do water fasts. You know, my son, that helps him a lot. You know, just our whole family likes it. When we sometimes we just think, you know what, we got to fast. I just got to do it. Very helpful. There's all sorts of different kinds of fasting, but water fasts are my favorite for me. A lot of people say in the health, natural health or health freedom movements, they're telling people to wear a blood glucose monitor while they're fasting, because they're helping to heal their diabetes with the fasting. And I know that there's multiple ways to actually heal and get better from at least type 2. Type 1, I'm not sure. I've seen it happen, but I don't want to, you know, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. You know, I'm just here to help people. But they get this, they get it in the mail and it has little pins on it and they can poke it on their skin and they wear it around. And I see it a lot. And I ask people in the grocery store, I know a couple of friends who got one, and I said, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, I was at my vitamin C IV place. And they said, if I want to start fasting, the doctor wrote me a prescription and I got this. And they actually put their phone up to it and it gets like, I mean, you can do a fasting without wearing a biosensor that sends stuff to your phone. Am I right? Or is this?
Well, I mean, sorry to interrupt, but like a kindergartner could figure this out. You know, when people ask me how to eat, I'm like, okay, if you want to eat macaroni and cheese, do you see a macaroni and cheese tree? Like it's pretty intuitive. What is natural? What is not natural? Right. The phones are not natural. We are electromagnetic beings. It's changing our frequencies. Why would you literally put an invasive thing in you to make you more like a machine? I mean, I don't think any biosensor is appropriate.
No. And you can check to see how you're doing just by checking to see how you're doing. So
how you feel.
Okay. Yeah. How do you feel? All right.
Are your fingers red? Are you inflamed anymore? You know, did you wake up with energy? Is your mood okay? We have our own sensors.
Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. All I think it's important to talk about like the outcomes and results, because that I think it's you're asking too, is right. There's no benefit to the outcomes and results by doing that. There's potential harm, like I said, using these frequencies, these things in and around our bodies.
Exactly.
It can be very harmful. And so again, when you're shifting from this is what you're told and what you believe, it does bring worry, right? It's scary. Like, am I going to do something to harm myself? But I can certainly reassure you that it's very safe if you're in tune with what's going on with your body, that your body will tell you if something's off. You don't need a machine to tell you.
Right. Yeah. And that's the first thing that I learned on the floor in nursing school. I had wonderful teachers, except for the fact that they taught me how to vaccinate people. Everything else was really good. It was all about environment. And we studied Florence Nightingale and how she took care of people. And so I would constantly be looking at the patient. I rarely looked at the numbers, except maybe to write them on my large fold out bed sheet, because we didn't have computers when I started. So, you know, those giant cardiac, you know, charts that we would write, and they'd sit across the bed and we'd be on this little tiny corner writing all of our notes. And I remember always looking at the patient and checking things, because a lot of times you would get somebody that would come in and be like, oh my God, look at the number. And I'd look at the number and I'd be like, do we have a code blue? And I'd look at the patient and he'd be like, hi, how's it going? And I'd be like, yeah, I think maybe the monitor fell off, you know, anyway. Okay.
By the way, Florence Nightingale, who you brought up, said there's no such thing as specific diseases. There's only poisoning and deficiencies, either recently or in the past. So she was firmly believer in these disease categories that we're talking about are just make believe.
Yeah, and you know that quote, I used to have it on my email all the time. Sometimes it pops up when I use a certain computer. I forgot it. I had even used that. But that quote is what kind of brought me into the, yeah, you did poison your kid. Now let's fix them. Because I was going through all my nursing, going through all my stuff, trying to figure out why. Because I was being told it was because I didn't socialize him enough that he was banging his head into the floor. I'm thinking, socialize him? He's 14 months. He's on his mom. We're on a hip. We go everywhere. He was talking to people. Anyway. Insane. Okay.
One other thing, if I could say, sorry, a thought came up was also the dependence part of this, right? So the labs, I don't have technology. Most of us probably don't have these labs in our home. So it makes you dependent on the system, right? And so I think a lot of the members here listening, they're probably awake to what's going on with the financial institutions and stuff that are very corrupt. And it's the same system of health that you're creating a dependence on them when you need these labs and need these diagnoses. And it's, again, it's all unnecessary. So there are steps to kind of being reassured and working with someone to help understand how it really works. But it's a huge liberating thing when you don't need these tests all of a sudden, all these labs for your health.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? Yeah.
You know, too, and to follow up with Adam said, I've heard Pam say this too. Once, like me, I made the commitment, because I looked into screening and there's no evidence that screening for disease actually confers better outcome, 100%, no evidence. So once you make that decision that I'm not going to outsource how I'm doing to anybody else, you start paying attention big time. Like, what did I eat and what did I do and who did I fight with and what did I wear? You know, and if you have an illness, you have to really think about how you're doing and what you may have done. And you cure yourself of victim consciousness. That's the illness. And if you then take responsibility, and you have to be sharp about it, and you get better and better at it as time goes on, because you have to.
Right. And raising my son with no vaccines after having such a damaged, he was brain damaged. Everything was damaged, my first son. But the second son, he was born, nothing happened. He came home, he breastfed, and he just grew bigger. And as he got older, he would get a rash sometimes. Sometimes he'd have a fever. He'd lay down and I'd, you know, lay with him and just kind of, you know, help him, comfort him, whatever. And then the next day he would have grown an inch, or his language burst forward, or, you know, all these things. And now he's 12. And I mean, I think he's talented and great, but he's playing on three different basketball teams with different age groups. And the coach uses him because he's kind of like a leader, because people follow him because he's the only one who can listen. Like, everybody is so vaccine injured, poisoned. I don't know. They're all drinking Mountain Dews. So let's think about this. And it's in California, so you know what they've got. And it's a really different situation when you're out there on your own. And over the years, I've become very confident in my ability. I say to myself, I'm his mom. I know how, you know, he tells me how he feels. I can already tell, right? If you just let those senses go, I don't need to call somebody and ask them, right? And if I want to discuss something, I can call a doctor and have a discussion with them without him wanting to poke him, you know, and figure out. Anyway, we'll get into the ranges and the screening and the cholesterol and the breast mammograms and all that stuff in a second. But I am always asked by about vitamin D levels, genetic testing, hemoglobin A1Cs, you know, things like that. And then after that, I wanted to talk a little bit about heart testing as well, you know, like troponin levels or different things like that. So, but first, what do you guys think about vitamin D? Let's just go with that one. What do you guys think? Vitamin D levels.
Well, they don't correlate with any disease or any condition that you have. So, and the most natural way to get your vitamin D is through the sunshine, which I think the sun is more than just vitamin D. It's a form of energy that nourishes the body. And I actually say that if the first light you can see in the morning is sunlight, it's best for your circadian rhythm to engage into normal patterns of sleep. So it's more than just vitamin D alone from the sun, obviously. But again, vitamin D levels, I used to do one in the past, obviously, after I woke up. But right now, you know, I don't think there's any point in checking them, but rather to provide information to the patient on how to nourish themselves, you know, whether it is fatty foods, cod liver oil, sunlight, nature, basically.
Anybody else about vitamin D?
I mean, whether they're accurate or not, I think everyone needs to go out in the sun. And I like everyone to take, if they're not eating things that give them vitamin D enough, take some cod liver oil and some butter oil or emu oil. And that, I mean, I think everyone should do that anyway. And if you do that, you're going to have good vitamin D levels if they're really a thing, you know? So I just feel like, you know, anything that is causing fear and dependence is going to cause ill health.
So here you can see the pathways that we're told as the production of vitamin D from 7-dehydrocholesterol in the epidermis. That's this one. And then the sunlight breaks this B ring of the cholesterol structure, and that forms pre-D3. And this undergoes a thermal-induced rearrangement to form this one, which is called D3. The continued irradiation, in other words, sunlight of pre-D3, leads to the reversible formation of lumisterol 3, which is this one, and tachysterol 3, which can revert back to pre-D3 this way in the dark. The main reason I want to show this slide is this makes it perfectly clear that we're not actually dealing with a vitamin, which used to be called a vital substance that has an amine in it, which is a nitrogen ring. So we're not dealing with that. And then the newer definition of vitamin is something like a cofactor that is something that we're not able to produce on our own, that we have to get from our diet. So there is no way that this substance fits that definition of a vitamin. In fact, it is a steroid hormone. The hormones like testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, prednisone in particular, are called steroid hormones because they're all breakdown products, or metabolites, a better word, of cholesterol.
Okay, well, I think that'll help a lot of people. So cholesterol, let's talk about it. Now, I would have to say that in the hospital, every single person that I would meet at the VA, they would come in, every person was being put on cholesterol medications. Now, the nurses and I, we would put everybody on fall precautions who were just getting started on cholesterol medications, because it would make people really dizzy. We knew that they were going to fall over, just like the prostate medicine for BPH, Lomax. We called it Fallmax. and we would hate, we, we would always try to get the patient to get up, urinate, drink their water. You know, like we were always trying to get them to do more things because as nurses, we see the side effects. We know what they're on. Like I could tell right away that my father-in-law started on a medication because I was talking to him on the phone and I heard his voice was soft. And I said, oh, you went to the doctor. What kind of meds are you on? Like I could instantly tell a difference because there's just a difference. You're not well, you know? So anyway, in turn, come to find out he was on some bad ones, but that's a whole nother story. What about cholesterol? What about that kind of stuff? What do we do about that? Because I know ranges, they keep changing them. It's a way to track us. Is it really important, et cetera?
Can I just say that, you know, you want to, this is my opinion, if you'd like your brain and body to work well, you want to have high cholesterol levels. So yeah, the only reason, like I said, I would ever run one in the past was in a kid, it didn't make sense. And again, now I don't even need to run it. Now I can just say, like Tom said, just you need to eat a lot more healthy cholesterol, right? That's how your brain and your body work. So like, it's just a big lie. I mean, it's one of the things that like, I have no tolerance for it almost. You know, when people bring up, but my cholesterol is high. I'm like, great. You'll be like really with it when you're older. This is a beautiful thing. And they're like, what? Right.
And people always say, oh, but it was the good kind or the bad kind. So there's like good and there's bad and it's fighting each other. And I'm just, so what about the good and bad? I know that people will be confused by that. Anybody? Good and bad cholesterol? Is there any? No.
Well, that's also a story, you know, the good and the bad, just to conquer and divide. but yeah, I agree with Pam. You know, cholesterol is an essential element, is produced by the body for a reason, for the membranes of the cells to communicate, for nerve cells to work better, for the conduction to happen. And so the bad and good cholesterol is just another story to make fear and get us rooted into the idea that you need to take a medication to lower it, because mm-hmm. the lower it goes, the better. And it's not true. It doesn't cause heart disease either. So yeah, that is totally misleading. And I wouldn't rely on any of those numbers that the traditional labs said about LDL or HDL. You have to basically focus on your nutrition.
Great.
Yeah.
It's also the number one selling drug, isn't it? Aren't statins the number one selling drug? So that there, right there, you should run from it. You know, it's upside down and backwards world. Like, just go.
Say first medication, I think that, yeah, sold over $1 trillion, right? Over $1 trillion. Okay. So yeah, first and foremost, it's totally reverse, right? So cholesterol is considered bad. Okay. Maybe there's good, bad. That's a distraction, but cholesterol is essential, like we said, even for healing, right? So the whole idea that heart disease and cholesterol is leading to heart attacks and strokes, that's what most people are afraid of, right? That's kind of the big linchpin, is that when they go in and they find plaques, you know, in the vessels that have a lot of cholesterol, that's there to help heal. There's endothelial damage, right? From emotional trauma, stress, tons of refined sugars, whatever it is, EMFs, the cholesterol is there to heal, just like the bacteria is, right? Once you have injury, you have dead decaying tissue from toxins. The bacteria, just like in nature, when you throw your scraps into a compost pile, the bacteria is there remediating and helping to restore, right? And so the story gets mixed up completely. And we don't have to go into heart disease because it's nothing to do with the plaques in the end. But in the end, it's really gets the whole role gets reversed. But cholesterol is also interesting because of the, you know, it shows here where the goalposts get moved, right? If you look historically, again, and we're all different, so we don't need to try to all get fit, you know, put in the same box, but normal cholesterol, you know, is, well, a 300 range is considered normal. Now it's 200, right, for total cholesterol. So you create a whole population of people that you can make a lot of money off and dumb them down and make them sick because they can't detoxify and help their bodies heal. So it's a huge, huge, huge disservice to a lot of people, because the goalposts get moved and now all of a sudden everyone thinks, oh, I'm not normal now. Again, like Dr. Cowan said, don't get the testing, you know, save yourself.
So I wrote a whole book on what causes heart disease, and mm-hmm. I don't want to go through that, but just anybody listening, just consider the following, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they say that the blood is the same everywhere, right? Every in the spleen artery, the coronary arteries, et cetera. the arteries are the same everywhere. Splenic artery, same as a coronary artery, you know, same as the hepatic artery and the femoral artery, right? Same blood, same arteries. So if the problem is something is too high and it's precipitating in these coronary arteries, then since the arteries are the same in the spleen and the same blood is in the spleen, it would precipitate in the splenic artery too, right? And so you do see plaque in the splenic artery, right? Because the same blood, they say, it's not true, but they say something is too high in the artery. So you get plaque in the coronary artery, splenic artery, hepatic artery. I've asked probably 50,000 to 100,000 people, how many of you know somebody who had a heart attack? Everybody raised their hand. Bill Clinton, Dick Cheney, a whole bunch of people. How many of you seen somebody with a spleen attack? Anybody? How about a liver attack? Nobody. How come? You got the plaque, you got the same thing in your blood. How come it's, you know, it isn't causing spleen attacks? And bottom line is, it has nothing to do with cholesterol. It has nothing to do with heart attacks. And it's been disproven. You know, they've done studies on people who die of heart attacks. Approximately 20% of them even have a lesion in the artery leading to that part of the heart. And it doesn't mean it caused it, just means it was there, which means at least 80% of people who have a heart attack and die don't even have any plaque in the artery leading to that part of their heart. The whole thing, and that's why stents and bypasses don't work and why you don't need to check your cholesterol. And as Pam and Rodney and Adam say, the higher it is, the better you are. That's been confirmed in the literature over and over again. It's a scam.
100%. I hope that this is helping people, because the fear that's caused by these. Now, let's, I guess we can go into preventative and screening tests, and I know what y'all think about them, but let's just talk about this for a second. There's also a really interesting article. The Western Press has a great one on routinely risky, the shadowy side of the colonoscopy. It's very interesting. I'll put this down. It's from like 2021 or something, but I printed this out and have given it to a lot of people. Because everybody, when they turn 50, I'm 52. So a lot of my friends are just turning 50 or they're just turning 55 and they're like, well, time to go get our colonoscopy screening. And I'm like, that's what you want to do for your 50th birthday? Okay. Just like all my girlfriends were like, I'm 40, time to go smash my boob in a mammogram machine. So I was like, no, thanks. You know, that sounds awful to me. My boobs are fine. Okay. So what are these preventative tests? Are there any that are actually helpful, or are you what my mom used to say, Jennifer Kathleen, you're borrowing trouble. So, I don't know what I was borrowing trouble for, but I guess I was asking too many questions. Maybe, I don't know, but, what are there any good ones at all that for screening and preventative, or do you think it's all just a way to get everybody to keep paying money into the system?
Well, I think more than that purpose, that's obviously part of the purpose, but to scare you, oh my gosh, if you don't get this, you'll have this colon cancer, or you'll have breast cancer, and you'll have no idea. And it's all, I mean, disease is caused by fear. So what a great way to make money for the medical system.
Yeah, it's fear and propaganda. If you're conditioned that you need to have a test to so-called prevent something, you're going to be depending on that specific age when the test is coming up. But in reality, you're not preventing anything. If the purpose of the test is to find something, well, early, they're already finding something instead of giving us the power to prevent it to begin with.
And then possibly, I've always thought when some of these tests are done, it can't be good for your body to continually, like yearly, put yourself out with propofol,
right?
And have a tube placed in your butt. You know, I don't think that that's healthy. Now,
or drink a gallon of Go Lightly the night before, right? Like, think about all the things people have to do for a colonoscopy.
Yeah, you know. So let's just say, now I'm not making fun of anybody that's gotten that done or anything and that they feel that it's important, but I wouldn't do it. But what would you say if you're healthy or not healthy and you're paying attention to your body and somebody comes in with symptoms that are similar to something that you think, that's a change, we better check something out. What scan or screening would you even look into if you suspected like a colon tumor or something, you know, because they're having trouble passing stool or something like that is happening? What would you guys do?
Let me address this screening thing first.
Yes,
first of all,
do.
Everybody should read a book by a guy named Gilbert Welch, Should I Be Tested for Cancer?
Yeah.
So here's what happens in how it's like W.C. Fields once said, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit. So what happens if you do like screening mammograms? So if you wait for some to find the lump, because you can feel the lump, then if you put somebody in the system, they live average, say, 3 years.
Right.
Now, or whatever it is, I'm just making up that number. If you do a mammogram, you find it 2 years before the lump happened, right? So there was 2 years where you didn't know you had a lump. And then they say, well, how long will you live with a mammogram? 5 years. So you end up living the same number of years, except you had two more years of treatment than you would have if you just hadn't bothered to look for it. If anybody has you live 5 years because you caught it 2 years earlier. So you live the same amount of time. But now, if anybody has a study that shows that outcomes are better from doing mammograms, colonoscopies, any screening blood tests, I would love to see it because I've looked and I don't see it. It doesn't exist. They just find things earlier. It's not preventing, like Rodney said, they're not preventing anything. They're just finding it earlier so you can get more treatment earlier.
The other thing that's happening too.
Very clever, by the way.
Yes, right? The other thing that's happening too.
I wish
too
I had thought of that, you know.
We'd all be millionaires.
Yeah, we'd make a lot more money.
We'd be going straight to hell. I don't know why I don't think of these things. Whatever. Yeah. The thing that my poor mommy, she was 78 and she was routinely going in for her mammograms. And this is a woman that homeopathy her whole life, raised by a Victorian grandmother, right, who lived to about 102, that had mom drink tea. And when she went outside, made sure it was cold outside, she'd have her face covered up because she didn't want the cold air to make her throat sore. And that's what causes lung problems. And nothing was bacteria or a virus or an infection. It was always just the environment. You know, that's how my mom was raised. She raised us that way. I was raised in homeopathy for other things. Like if I had this, oh, just spray a little bit of this, put some bee pollen on it. My mom was Mrs. Nature. Then she gets her Medicare card. And she starts getting phone calls from really nice people. And there she was so sweet. And she called her and she said, are you ready for your mammogram? And my mom would be like, oh, I have a mammogram? You know, like that kind of thing. And they would treat her like a queen. She'd go in, get her breast smushed. And so then they found something. Yeah, of course. It's you know, who knows what it was. Come to find out, it was nothing. It was a stage zero. What are those things called that they used to do the big surgeries for now? It was like in situ.
It's called carcinoma in situ, in situ.
Right. And I begged her and did everything. But, you know, I'm just Jen, you know, and that's the big system. And the guy had a white coat on. Okay, people. So she went from being a healthy, happy grandma. Healthy-ish. Because she had other things, you know, other issues because she was in the medical system, but she was doing things, driving, working as an apartment manager, busy, in everybody's business. And then she went and she decided she took on the, I have breast cancer. They sent her pink t-shirts, pink bows, got her in the hospital, put her under all sorts of anesthesia, which I'm not sure is good for somebody who's almost 80. I don't think it's good for anybody, but you know, think about what they did. Removed her breast. She didn't have reconstruction because she had such trouble in surgery. In fact, they say that they put her into congestive heart failure. So she left that place with not only a, oh, and they started her treatments as well. So they not ever poisoned her for something that she didn't even need to be poisoned for, and then took her breast and then moved her into this other realm of CHF and started sending her out. So mom not only was a cancer patient, but then she also became a CHF patient. And my heart was broken in two because, and we'll go into the heart testing and stuff in a second, but the fear when she got the mammogram and the anxiety leading up to getting the biopsy and then getting this and then going here and there, she missed out on birthdays, fun, sunshine, library, you know, missed out on being a grandma and a person. And she just became part of the system. Like I would buy her fancy pink robes because she was always in the hospital. You know, like I didn't know how else to keep her happy. So I'm just saying that I don't feel that screening is important. Now I do know that there is such thing as breast cancer, but what she was screened for and what they found on her wouldn't have killed her.
Right. And I've heard people say before, and I agree, these screening tests will usually catch cancer you will die with, not from. You know, to think that you're never going to have a cancer cell is pretty naive.
Right. Right. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, we just have a couple more things I wanted to cover, and then I want to talk about the clinic. But some of the other stuff that I keep getting is a lot of people are getting that congestive heart failure diagnosis. And I know these patients really well, like I'll know their families or I'll have met them at a birthday party. I'm invited to weddings. I've been in three quinceañeras. I show up and I'm in a dress because, you know, you get to know the family if you're the nurse that they call and you can rush out and help them with a nebulizer or something. And all it is normal saline, but it's helping them, right? It makes them feel good. Or maybe it's got a little bit of chlorine dioxide or something and whatever I'm doing to help them. Whatever makes them happy when their kids are coughing. So I know these people and I know how happy they are and what they're doing with their lives. And then they go off to the doctor or they get a procedure or something. And then they get a CHF, congestive heart failure diagnosis. Or they are sent in for blood work and they're told their troponin levels are funny. So it looks like they probably had a heart attack at some point. So two things that can happen, not at the same time, sometimes at the same time, but sometimes they're different. So they get these diagnoses. It's as if they take the diagnosis and they put a crown on the person's head of like, I crown you, here's your diagnosis. And then, and it's really heavy because the person's like then trying to walk around and be a normal person then after they're, you know, given this diagnosis. Now, first of all, testing for heart attacks. What is that? Can we talk a little bit about it? Is it important? What does it mean? If somebody comes to you and says, my troponin was high, what is that? You know, can somebody explain that a little bit?
Well, we go back to the issue of the model in which the system is developed.
Right.
You have a test for a specific diagnosis without necessarily looking at the story of the patient and what really led to the patient to develop, let's say, chest pain or swelling of the leg or shortness of breath. When, you know, personally, I have an interest in what is called German New Medicine, and we look at all these issues from a different standpoint, and we really pay attention to the story of the patient, what's going on in their life. A lot of patients with CHF will tell you that their life is kind of constricted or overwhelmed by too much things to deal with, and the heart suffers that way. The sympathetic and parasympathetic system are affected. And then obviously, if you get an enzyme in the blood that is going to be elevated because the heart is being stoned, you know, now you have a diagnosis. Voila, now we need a cath. Now you need a CABG and all of that. And so going back to the basic understanding of, as long as you follow the traditional paradigm of diagnosis treatment, you're going to be hooked up to that system that is not, it's not going to lead you to a way back to healing.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. I think that's going to help a lot of people. And I do know a lot of people that have CHF and they've been helped with strophanthus. I'm always sending them to Tom Cowan's site, telling them about it. I don't know how many times I've printed off the page, you know, and it shows all the pretty flowers and it's the entire strophanthus page. And I like staple it and I hand it to people. So, you know, what am I going to do? You know, you try to give people hope because getting them out of the system is hard. I do know that one of the books that I have around here, Big Brother in the Exam Room, I try to get everybody to get that because it gives you it's another look. You guys are focused on healing people and helping people with their bodies. And then you go over to the hospital side and everything's run by these machines, right? So an H&P, a history and physical, I know I would go in and do my nursing assessment in the hospital before computers.
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
When you're talking about CHF,
yes.
The problem with medicine fundamentally is it's basically a very anti-scientific endeavor. And the reason I say that with CHF is they think, they being conventional medicine, have this theory, which I would say is a disproven hypothesis, that the heart pumps the blood around the body. And so if the heart isn't able to pump the blood around the body, then you get into congestive heart failure. But if you just look at the circulation with these thousands and thousands of miles of vessels with sticky fluid in it, with stuff in it like red blood cells that's about the same internal diameter as the vessels, how is it possible for this 1-pound organ to push all that blood all the way around the body? It's not. And then when you look at the outflow tube, when you're in the pushing stage, the outflow tube constricts in, makes a more acute angle instead of spreading out like any pump, you know, any hose would do. So if you don't know why or how the blood circulates, which is what the problem with congestive heart failure, you're never going to be able to fix people's circulation problems. And that's why they say, well, you're going to have this the rest of your life and you're going to die with it because we don't know what to do about it, because we don't know why it's there in the first place. And, you know, we know that, for instance, statin drugs are a major cause of congestive heart failure.
Yes.
that's been known for 40 years. And so you put somebody for prevention, so-called, on a statin drug, next thing you know, they go into heart failure. And it's never anything that anybody does, because that's not part of medicine, right? It's not part of medicine that you did something wonky or your doctor did something wonky. It's just genetics, bad luck, or germs.
And it's not those horrible diets that they put you on as well. The nutrition.
It's nothing to do with what you did. And that's the difference. They have a value-free system of medicine and a quality-free and a responsibility-free. And there's no life in that.
Nope. Nope. Not at all. Thank you. I needed to get that explanation. I was hoping for that. So I suggest everybody read. I know that Catherine did a review on it, but Human Heart, Cosmic Heart. It's a great book. It'll explain things, and you can just start going from there. And if anybody's suffering with CHF or anything, just go to the New Biology Clinic and have a discussion with them and figure out what else you can do, you know, because maybe you can change your paradigm and your health will change. That's the way I always feel. Okay, so here's, let's talk about the other thing. Okay, when you talk about maybe biomarkers or different kinds of testing, like, let's see, what would be some things? I know that people are constantly saying, oh, this showed this, you know, like, well, let's just use the spike protein. So there's lots of things coming out saying that the COVID-19 shots are actually creating spike proteins in your body, and spike proteins are going all over your body. Now, I'm not a super genius. I just read a lot of studies, and from what I can tell, I saw a long time ago at the beginning of this, there was a Japanese study, I think, and I'll link it below. I'll find it somewhere, that showed that all of these intact lipid nanoparticles were intact, but they were everywhere in the little mice, right? They were in their ovaries, they were in their brains, they were in their liver, they were all over the place. It appears to me like the shots, this is just an example, we don't have to get all into it, but it appears to me that when the shot goes in, it goes off like a bomb. It just goes, and it just goes all over the place and just sits and does whatever. And who knows what else is in it? But I'm not really sure that that whole manufacturing thing is happening. And now spike proteins are being like manufactured. Like I imagine like the cartoon manufacturing with all the little wheels, and like it's going all over the place now and getting into places. But people say that the tests were done on the tissue. And so they used a specific dye and that turned this color. And that was kind of like a biomarker or something that tells you, like, this dye tells you it was the spike protein. Is that even a thing? Or, and I'm not even talking specifically spike protein, are these things like dyes and the biomarkers for something in a blood test, are they real? Are they really testing for it? Do they really know it? Or is it all just a bunch of phooey?
I think it's a story. You know, I think it's kind of obvious if you inject somebody with poison, they're going to not feel well.
Yeah.
And then you just make up a story.
Right.
I mean, yeah. So A, there's no evidence that mRNA can get into any tissue or cell. B, there's no evidence that this mRNA will be turned into spike protein. And the reason I say that is because there is not a single study that any animal or person injected with mRNA will end up with higher or lesser amount of spike proteins. Right. All they do is take antibodies, which they claim are specific to spike proteins, but they never, there's not one study that actually takes the same antibody and has a different mRNA or have them injured from some other reason. so they could actually see whether it's specific to spike proteins or not, because it isn't. And they never actually inject a different antibody to see if that would light up either. So these are uncontrolled anti-scientific studies that have been picked up by the likes of McCullough and Malone and all that crowd to say that they're making something and you're genetically modified. And it's a bunch of anti-scientific hooey.
Right. So they're poisoned, and we've got to help them get healthy.
You make antibodies to repair your tissue.
Right. And they're non-specific.
Poisoning you. You repair your tissue. They're misinterpreting that as making you make spike proteins. And now it used to be everybody had chronic fatigue syndrome, and then they had Lyme disease, and then they had fibromyalgia, and then they have spike protein disease.
Or long COVID.
Long COVID.
Right, right, right.
Long COVID.
And these people are really sick, and I feel horrible.
Nobody's
for
saying
them.
They're not sick.
Exactly.
But they don't have long COVID. And they don't have spike protein disease.
Right.
They don't have fibromyalgia, and they don't have Lyme disease.
Right.
And what happened to chronic fatigue syndrome? Nobody ever sees anybody with chronic. It's gone.
Long COVID now. Well, that's what I've got a lot of people that are really sick, you know, that I help, or I try to focus them towards you guys or books, and I just try to change their paradigm. Stop with the diagnoses is what I say. I didn't even let them give my son his autism diagnosis because I thought, well, he's poisoned. So he did get PDD-NOS. That's very helpful. Pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. Oh, so that was a number and went on a chart, cha-ching. And then I got out of my insurance.
I wanted specified.
That's what I'm like, wait a minute. I paid a lot of money.
You gotta specify this one.
I used to tell my patients that your diagnosis is just a billing code. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it's just a made up thing to charge you money.
Right. And it's a name for different symptoms. And a lot of parents will say, well, it's the only way I get this kind of education for my kid, or it's the only way I get my kid over here. So I use it. I use it for this or that. Okay. I just always tell my kid, you're good. We're just, you're eating right. You know, we're just going to be healthy. You know, I try not to put any labels on him or anything, but I did tell him what happened to him with his vaccines, you know, that he did change and stuff. And he remembers not being able to talk for 5 years. So he was there, he right there with me. He knew it was happening. So I don't need to give him a diagnosis. But anyway, that's just
you know, me. I was on a panel once with a bunch of pediatricians on ADHD. And I asked him what the diagnosis was. And one of them said, well, excessive pencil tapping. So of course, being me, I asked him, how many times per minute do you have to tap your pencil
before
you have ADD?
And
to my glee, he bit and he said 20. So I said, so if a guy taps his pencil 19 times per minute, he's fine. And if he taps 20 times per minute, you give him Ritalin. Is that how it works?
Oh my God. Don't even get me started with what they're doing to the babies on those drugs. Oh, and of course he wouldn't.
I mean, this is nonsense.
I think it's funny. Yeah. Okay. That's good. All right. So I'm just getting down to the last parts. So if somebody were to come to you and you start on everything, and let's just say that they're a diabetic and they are taking their blood sugars or whatever, you guys are going to work with them. You're not going to be like, stop taking your blood sugars every day or whatever. You know, you're not going to say that's a bunch of hooey. You're going to talk with them. You're going to work with everybody, right? But you're not going to create fear. I think that's the biggest thing that I like about the new biology clinic is you're not there to create fear. The other thing that's going to be a little difficult for a lot of people to get, and some of my patients get offended. I always say, take responsibility for your own health. 100%. It's you. It's not somebody else. It's not the doctor. It's not the nurse. It's you. You're responsible for your health. And the mommies are responsible, or mommies and daddies responsible for their kids' health until they get to be a certain age. And then we can work together. So I really feel that that's the reason I wanted you guys on here today. I'm getting so many, you know, where do I go for labs for heavy metals? What I do, look, this is my advice. Then you guys can do a quick heavy metals and then we'll talk about the new biology clinic. For me, if you live in this world, number one, if you've ever had a vaccine, you got metals. If you read Dr. Christopher Axley's aluminum, if imagine MIBA is aluminum atom, imagine you are an aluminum atom. Sorry about that. If you read this book, you'll see, yeah, we all got aluminum. We got aluminum, we got mercury, we got lead, we got all sorts of stuff. So we just have to work towards health.
Enter Christopher Exley, PhD, also known by his colleagues as Mr. Aluminum. He's read almost every paper published since 1980 written on aluminum. In his new book, Imagine You Are an Aluminum Atom, he shares profound insights to our health. Dr. Exley found the brains of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's to contain aluminum far greater than the average brain, and those with familial Alzheimer's to have the highest levels. Next, he looked for the healthiest brains he could find. The Brain Bank in London supplied him with over 20 healthy post-mortem brains of people ages 65 to 105 who did not suffer from cognitive or neurologic impairment. He found that aluminum was not present. Based on that research, Dr. Exley emphatically believes that with no aluminum in the brain, there would be no Alzheimer's disease in the normal lifetime of an individual. There is no such thing as healthy aluminum levels, yet according to Christopher Exley, it's in every cell in our body. Knowing that earlier reports suggest that aluminum is present in autistic children and that it should only be present in older tissue, which has accumulated aluminum over a period of decades, Dr. Exley wanted to see if he could identify it in autistic brains. He contacted the UK Brain Bank for Autism and was given 10 brains to test. When Dr. Exley's team had the opportunity to examine the first brain, that of a deceased 15-year-old, the team was stunned. They found that there was significantly more aluminum in the brain of the autistic child than that of an 85-year-old Alzheimer's patient. Quoting from the abstract, aluminum in brain tissue in autism. These are some of the highest values for aluminum in human brain tissue yet recorded. And one has to question why, for example, the aluminum content of the occipital lobe of a 15-year-old boy would be 8.74 micrograms per gram dry weight. As most of you know, aluminum salts are the adjuvant given in most vaccines as a way to stimulate the immune system to detect and negate whatever the vaccine is carrying. For example, the hepatitis B vaccine given on the first day of life contains 250 micrograms of aluminum. Be aware that aluminum is not your friend and begin studying how it gets into your body.
Do you guys use, now I feel silly asking, do you guys use any labs? But what do you suggest? Because everybody always wants to know, how do I test for anything? Now, Christopher had a wonderful saying in his book about aluminum testing and that it was super expensive. And he felt that it was a waste of time because none of the labs really work it the way his lab would do it. And his lab's been doing it for 40 years. And he does it a specific way, one way, and that's how he looks at it. And he doesn't trust any of the other ones that have come up. And he feels that it's useless. And just know that you probably have some aluminum in you. So, you know, you can drink your silica waters and you guys can go back and look at that interview to find out exactly how to do that. So to help clear aluminum. Okay. What do you guys think about heavy metals?
Well, heavy metals are obviously everywhere, widespread, but you know, if somebody gets poisoned by metals, we also have to think about what are they lacking of that allow the metal to get bind to their cell, which is usually minerals or the ability, electricity of the body to work and communicate. And so we guide our members into how to restore that process first and to look into their own deficiencies from their nutrition and what they have missed in their life that has allowed those metals to bind and replace the things that they need. That way the metals can unbound from their cells and be removed on their own. So it's just part of the process. You know, fortunately, a lot of our members, they already been through a path in their healing. And when they come to us, they already have some understanding of how the process works. We listen to their story. We work in their foundations, and nutrition is one of the initial foundations we work on. And then we build upon that and guide them into that, empower them that they can heal themselves and restore them back to their health that they want.
That's wonderful. Anybody else about metals? Any testing that you like? Hair, urine? No?
Yeah, I would echo what Rodney said as far as, you know, when we see whether it's toxicity from EMFs or chemical metal, two different individuals are going to be much more, you know, they have a much different susceptibility depending on their own condition and state. And so if you look at if someone's very deficient in something, lacking in something, they're going to be much more sensitive to that, right? And so, at the end of the day, I think the approach is the same. I think we can create all the specificity and we can spend a lot of money doing stuff. But at the end of the day, if we're interested in trying to help someone and do it in the most effective, affordable way, again, you can cut a lot of that out. If you go back to what you talked about with, you know, the spike protein and all this, is all this stuff is made up. The specificity of this is made up. It's a lot simpler when you look at it from a more principled standpoint of this is a metal. How do the metals interact in the body? How do we know ways of getting the metals out of the body? So, this can all be done at home. It can be done usually, you know, very safely and easily, and usually a lot less, more expensive than you'd think.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. So the thing that I really liked about the New Biology Clinic and the reason I chose it for my family, and again, I paid for it. You guys didn't give me a coupon or a discount or anything. Thanks. I'm just kidding. I signed up myself.
We'll talk to Asher about that.
No, I'm kidding. I'm fine. My husband was very excited. He's just like, oh, do I get to meet Dr. Tom? And I'm like, no, John, calm down. They're my friends. Okay. Now, I was really excited because when the first thing that I saw when I was joining was there were no big brother in the exam room type questionnaires. There was nothing that was going to just be a choose A or B, right? The history and physicals will come when you talk with the doctors, when you go over things with them. You can send them anything, but there's no what I said before. I used to write down all sorts of things for my history, for my nursing assessment, for my head to toe. And I would take certain things and I'd be like, oh, you know, she looks like she's going to, you know, pass out. I'm going to check if she's bleeding out or whatever. You know, it was labor and delivery. And I would make all my notes. But all of a sudden it changed. And I went back on the floor after having my first child. I went back to work on the floor again. And computers were starting to come in. Everything was a checkbox. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. So there was no place for me to write my soap note. There was no place for me to communicate to somebody what had actually happened, or that the father came in and was yelling at her. And so now her blood pressure has spiked and she's upset and family is not at bedside anymore. And you know what I mean? Things like that. So you can't write those notes. So then they don't know. They just come in and, you know, anyway, whatever. You guys are really great at that. Also, I logged in just to check what was happening after I paid my money and I logged in, and there was boom, 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 videos and live streams and exercise workshops and movement and a veterinarian. And so I'm going to be able to keep my 12-year-old Mastiff. I just beg him every day. I go, don't go to the light, Bandit. You have to stay with mommy. So we're going to keep him healthy. And I'm just really excited. So let's talk about it and how everybody can join. And then I think Asher said that he was going to have some sort of a coupon for all the members. Now, Solari doesn't get a kickback for anything ever. We're just all about trying to help our subscribers get healthy, find truth. So you guys will be offering something for them, but Asher didn't tell me exactly what it was. So at some point it'll be down there like a little link and you guys can click it and then you'll get your coupon when this video plays. I promise. Okay. Tell us about it. You did a little bit and tell us about it. And then what do I expect if I'm going to be a patient for the new biology clinic?
Well, I can say, yeah, for someone that joins, like you asked that question before, you know, do we work with someone that's currently seeing a physician and getting blood work? You know, absolutely. Like, our goal is to work with anybody and everyone where they're at and try to help them, because most people and us, we work through the system, right? And so we kind of know in the very fine detail exactly how the current system works. So if you're very much just seeing a mainstream MD or seeing, you know, even someone alternative health, we obviously can work, you know, with them. And a lot of people we're working with right now, they're currently might be seeing another doctor, right? They might have someone else they're seeing, and they might show us their labs. And so we try to help, just like we did today, decipher what is what, right? Because there's certainly some lab tests that are indicating things. And so if you have that, we can talk about that. Certainly, do we think that's the best way, most effective way of doing it? Not in most cases, right? So, but overall, yeah, that's where we'll work with someone wherever you're at and try to help them as much as we can by listening, like you said, actually listening to their story of what's going on, instead of just, we'll put you in this box because you hit this and this and this check mark, right? But it's, I think what's really exciting, as you also mentioned, is it's not just us, but we're working with others, you know, on movement, primal movement, and on nutrition, and on emotional and energy work and biofield tuning. And so we're looking at the whole person, because as we talked about with what's going on with heart disease or heart attacks, especially, you know, these are emotional, energetic things that are oftentimes leading to this. So it's not just nutrition or just the physical exercise, but it's also the emotions and energetic part too. That's very important. And I think most of us agree it's probably the most important thing, especially today, because the actual health system that's supposed to be helping us is creating this massive state of fear. Even the alternative health, a lot of it, like you said, with like the jab and COVID and all this, it's these are deceptions of things that are actually, we can't be, we're as beings, we're not programmable like computers. And it's freaky if you start to think these things are true, that this mRNA can come in. And so breaking that down for people, I think, is really liberating and freeing as we look at, you know, look at the truth of all this, step away from the fear, because at the end of the day, our bodies don't heal. Our bodies are not in optimal health when we're in a state of fear. So it's a total different perspective, looking at stuff from truth, looking at the reality of it, and helping people find a better quality of life. Because I think with the lab work, again, there's so many layers of this. It's so focused on the quantity of stuff. Who enjoys focusing just on all these numbers, right? Let's focus on the quality of your life. And there's so many ways of getting there. There's certain principles and foundations, like we talked about today, that are essential that we need to get to. But, you know, we don't all have to be eating exactly the same way. Understanding the principles, we can each find our own way to a good quality of life that works with our life, our own family, our own situations. So I think that's key, is trying to help people improve their quality of life and their health, you know, at the same time. And we don't have to do things that, the last thought I had here is that, and Jennifer, you brought it up, is that who in of themselves, if they didn't believe these lies, that these tests are absolutely necessary, would want to go get poked and jabbed and prodded and put themselves at risk, right? Because there's a lot of risks that don't get talked about with these testing. None, I don't think anybody would do that, right? So it's really helping from someone that truly understands and can talk to you as why that's not necessary and how we can actually make a difference. So
that's great. Thank you.
One point I want to make is that our practitioners, we have different backgrounds, but when we approach our members, we don't see them from a specialist standpoint. You know, I'm a neurologist, Pam is a psychiatrist, Adam was an anesthesiologist, Dr. Cowan was an emergency doctor, and so on. But we look at the person as a whole, and we integrate modalities that are geared towards their healing. You know, if any testing that I will say we advise sometimes, believe it or not, is to look into the bioenergy field. One of our enrichment practitioners does biofield tuning and provides valuable information about what's going on in the energy of the body of the individual. And so we look at those things in a more holistic way rather than into a specialized just heart or brain disease or separate organs. Is an integrated human being that we address.
Absolutely. And once we support you guys and build you bigger and bigger and bigger, because I know that you keep having to add practitioners more and more and more, then maybe you can start hiring home health nurses to go around and actually go into people's homes and help out too. Maybe, yeah, can I have a job? No, I'm just kidding. Maybe we can start building clinics in every, you know, city that people can go and visit just in case they, you know, have an issue, you know, they can go in too. So, but for now, this is, it's working for me. I really like it.
I just wanted to add to sum up, you know, when we know better, we do better. So anyone who is worried, like I'm too, you know, I got too much damage from Western medicine, like you can always get better. Your body can always recover. It's an amazing machine, which is actually why I became a doctor. You know, so look at it as kind of this adventure. You know, you get to tune up your machine like a great sports car, and, you know, don't worry about what you've done in the past. We can all recover so much health when we just learn the right ways, you know. And I, in my opinion, you know, a doctor should be an educator, kind of like everyone here is at the clinic, you know. So I encourage people, like, it's never a bad thing to be sick. It's a journey to get better.
Right. And you have to know that it's your responsibility. And it took a long time for your body to get the way it is. So you're not going to just say, I'm taking Berberis and tomorrow I'm all healed. You know, so you can't look at it that way. You have to look at it as a process. So, boy, that's positive. It's going to take forever. No, it'll be better. I promise.
Well,
you,
I mean,
can feel better.
Just to comment on that, I think that when we get sick, we get a message. It's like it's either obvious or it's not. But when you get the message, it's pretty miraculous how quickly your body shifts. Like,
yeah,
pretty miraculous.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. It doesn't necessarily take a long time. And
correct.
The only thing I'll add is I am been overwhelmed with the response, not only of the members, but with the practitioners. And it means I don't have to do this, which is good for everybody, I think. And we have an amazing group of people who are working with members, and it's just really a joy to be part of. It's all I really want to say here.
Yeah, I think that it's like a family, and I can't wait to log in when we all get to meet together, all the members meet on a video call, and so we all get to meet each other. That's going to be exciting too. So, because, you know, we need friends. I lost a lot, and I don't know how during COVID. That's weird, right? Just because I wore a Mandalorian mask to the grocery store instead of a real mask, maybe that helmet did it. I'm not really sure. I had to keep it happy for the kids. So we all dressed up as Mandalorians with great big helmets on just so we could get in and get our groceries. It was better than me getting arrested for not wearing one. So thumbs up. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Is there anything else that I missed?
Did a great job.
Good.
I mean, there's... Okay, awesome. Thank you for staying. I know it's a long one, but I really wanted to go through all of the questions that I get all the time, nonstop, about labs. And I think we can all know that it's our responsibility. Keep our health, just keep the health in our own hands. We don't need to give it to Big Brother, and we can have partners with doctors at the New Biology Clinic. That's what I think.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us on the health series.
Thank you.
And I'll see you guys later. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.